Welcome everybody to another Bangers and Classics podcast, and I'm a bit worse than aware because obviously we're in the middle of the Bangers and Classics Christmas party, so all mispronunciations and abuse and swear words, I'm afraid, we have no control over, because it's a Merry Christmas to everybody, because it's 2021. So what are you doing, David? Are you dressing up as Santa and delivering presents later?
Well, obviously at the party. Yeah. You must be so paff you can't even see me.
I can't, Dave.
You've lost it. Shocking, yeah. Shocking. Yes. No. I mean, you're Santa. I mean, I would not tread. Yeah, I would not tread on your territory.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Besides, you're more equipped with a certain physical accoutrements to be Santa than me. I'm just a gadget, remember?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, it's a Christmas podcast, and let's get straight into it. Now, I suppose since we're going to have a bit of fun with this, we should probably get the bad news out of the way, and that is obviously that Hazel Chapman passed away this week. By the time you hear it, it will be last week, but it was very much current for James and I are now, and obviously she was the wife of Colin Chapman. She was a co-founder of Lotus, and she played an integral role in building the company up, and was, I am told, a very astute businesswoman indeed. She was 94, which is a good innings, but nonetheless, it's sad that she's passed on. Naturally, we at Bangers and Classics send our condolences to our friends and family.
Absolutely.
Yes, and another, not bad news, but shall we say somewhat topical news, the junior transport minister says owning a car is outdated 20th century thinking, and that we should all embrace shared mobility. Now, she says this in the middle of a flipping pandemic. I mean, really, what is that all about? There are lots of things I could say about this, but it's a Christmas podcast. I'm just going to say one thing. It's rank stupidity, and then I'm going to move on. What about you?
Well, she seems like a very nice lady, doesn't she?
Does she?
Oh, yeah, she seems really, really nice. I think there's a tiny bit of investigation needed, which I'm going to do. I'm going to start a series called Know Your Enemy. And she represents the enemy, really, in where, I mean, I'm assuming she lives in a sort of very urban, you know, central city address. I know she's got four children. You couldn't manage four children, I don't think, without at least a seven-seater vehicle. So I'd love to know how she gets by. I don't think she even qualifies for a minister's car as a junior minister, but maybe she does. It is the elite speaking to us, as we don't really matter. But I always say, you know, there's 40 million cars on the road, isn't there? Or 40 million drivers or so. There's 40 million. There's more of us than them. And the sooner we let them know, the better. But at the moment, they are basically just going to get us out of our cars. It's all very sad. And they're just softening us up for this. And unfortunately, people don't get mad enough, you see, David. I mean, I know you're chomping at the bit, and we've had to pile quite a lot of Santa's sacks on top of you to keep you in one place. But really, you know, people should be fuming about this. They really should be very, very upset about it, and say, well, no, the car has brought innumerable benefits to us, and you can just trot out the old argument: if you don't live near a bus route, then you are scuppered for work, you're scuppered for social life, you're scuppered for just about everything, scuppered for getting to a hospital.
So, absolutely.
So really, you know, cars are absolutely essential, and they are a force for good. And all this nonsense we're being subjected to, the climate nonsense, don't get me started on all that, it's an absolute obsession. So anybody says climate nonsense, just say China to them. That's what we say here.
Yes, you're going to become an enemy of the state at this rate, James.
I think I might be. I know I'm on my local MP's list sort of having a go at him about all sorts of things, and this will be yet another thing that I can add to it. I don't know. You know, the more I look at all this, you know, actually moaning about it and even, you know, writing to your MP about it, I don't know whether it has any real effect. I only think sort of action on the streets.
Well,
it's a bit like, I mean, if they ban cars, David, I will just keep driving, and I really don't care.
I'm not sure that writing does any good. Maybe we should draw them some pictures instead. I mean, that's what I would say. Still, I mean, you may be in a list, but your name did not appear in the Home Secretary's desk, as did mine in 1997, but we won't go into that. Yes, it's the world's gone mad. I mean, we're now living in a world in which a Formula One team takes a barrister to a race. I'm not going to comment on Formula One, but that act did remind me of a scene from a film. It's a film called Slapshot. It's a wonderful film. If you're easily offended, do not watch it. But everybody else, please do. Probably not suitable for kids either, I would say. For adults who can take a joke, got a sense of humour, and are not easily offended, it's a brilliant, brilliant film. It's about ice hockey. It's Paul Newman. And there is a scene towards the end where names of various people are read out. They read out the name of one chap, and it says, never travels anywhere without his friend and attorney, Sam Small Print Lyman, or something like that. And the Mercedes action and taking a barrister to Abu Dhabi with them reminded me of that, and I found the whole thing hilarious. Of course, being from one-time illegal background, I found it even more hilarious. But there we go. We should move on from that.
Not sure what happened, David. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it. But there you go. You're quite right. Let's move on to something else.
Absolutely. Well, we could move on to car spots, but I've not seen any. I could go and paint some spots on cars.
Well, you could do that. I haven't been over lucky, but I've seen a lot of Volvos. I was going to comment about some friends of ours who've got an old 850 estate. We had a shower unit we took to bits and said, well, you can have that if you want. They said, oh, well, we'll come in the Volvo. And he said, well, no, you're going to need a panel van. You know, it's like there's loads, it's, you know, they're massive bits of glass. And they came with their 850 the other day, and it just went in the back. It was just great. It was just a completely flat area, this old car. And it all fitted in. So, yeah, if you want to shift stuff. And then just a few minutes ago, I happened to be on the edges of the estate, and I heard quite a rough engine. And it was a previous to the 850. It was one of those proper old 240s, and it was making a noise, so I don't know what it was doing. It was being driven in a terrifying fashion, so they're obviously doing something with it. What I've seen is lots of Volvos doing work. I mean, I'm not quite sure. Maybe Santa's got some Volvos, and he's shifting stuff around. I think that could be the answer.
He very probably has, I would think so. As long as he's not too tall. I was once asked to drive a boss's Volvo. I think it was a 240 estate, and there's no blooming legroom in it.
You don't fit into anything at all, do you?
No, I don't. It's
terrible.
It's dreadful. It's absolutely dreadful. I very nearly wrote to Volvo to complain and say, come on, you're supposed to be quite big chaps in Sweden, you know. But obviously, it's a myth. We've been sold this myth for years.
I don't know. Are you doing the sitting in the seats correctly, David? I'm getting very worried now about...
Oh, right. You're supposed to sit...
About you assuming the position, but there you go.
Wait a minute. Hang on. You're supposed to sit in the seats. I was sitting on top of the seat on the backrest. Yeah. You're not supposed to do that.
Maybe not. No.
All right.
I used to know someone who used to recline their seats and almost it was like lying down. But he was perfectly fine at driving. but he was a car salesman as well. But he used to drive everywhere almost lying down and without consequence. So
somewhat laid back chap, obviously.
Very laid back indeed.
Indeed, yes. Well, shall we move on from car spots? Being this is Christmas, it's a festive theme. And I was wondering, James, what would the three wise motoring men bring to Bangers and Classic Towers? Well, obviously, I'd for cake, lots of cake.
Yeah. But
anything else you can think of we'd want them to bring?
I was really bored. You know, I know this is, you know, like, you know, a comedy moment, and really I should come up with all sorts of funny things. But actually, I thought, well, yeah, Tire World is always good. I know it's not great stuff, but it will fill a hole, as well as the cake, obviously, depending on what the cake is. A battery. I always think spare batteries are good. Not a PP something to put in your Christmas toy, but actually a proper 12-volt one. The other one would bring a head torch because I've been obsessed by head torches because they are just fantastic. I've got two hands again with using my head torches. So there you go. Really boring, really practical.
Oh dear, indeed. Well, I thought of a new burglar alarm.
Yeah,
it's a voice. It's just a voice alarm, and it's Greta Thunberg shouting it. How dare you? How dare you? That's bound to work. That would scare anybody off.
Oh, it would.
Then I thought, what could we get to repel MPs? If you can think of something that will repel MPs, then please tell us because that would be great. That would be wonderful and will fit up to all our cars, I am sure. Now, there's a third wise man, and he's so wise he's gone down the pub and not bothered to bring anything. So I think on that note, we're just going to take a break. And we are back after that break. I'm pleased to report that James hasn't drunk quite all of the mulled wine yet, but I see he's eyeing up the port at the moment. Yes. What port is it, James Southampton?
Most likely. Either that or Felix, though. I don't know. It's one of the two.
Yes. Okay. Well, seeing it's Christmas time, we're not going to have a banger or a classic this week. We're going to have a cracker or a turkey. And this week's contestant, this week's entrant, somewhat against its will, is the Riley Elf. And I think, Mr. Ruppert, you know, you being closer in age to it, should...
Oh, really?
Apparently. That's what it says here. I'm just working to a script.
I think I'm a few years older, unfortunately, than
No, I don't think so. I think you're about contemporaneous. That's a good word.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Good word.
strangely enough, the last time I think I ever wrote something for... mini magazine, I think I went to look at one of those, which belonged to a chap. It was painted bright yellow, which I think was a proper colour. And I can't remember the name of the colour now. I should be able to, but I can't. It was a cute enough little thing. It's quite amazing. You see, when people talk about badge engineering, which certainly the Roots group used to do, that really was sticking a badge on and a bit of trim. But this was a re-engineered car, really, wasn't it? I know all the mechanicals pretty much the same, but actually it must have cost them quite a lot to do the front and certainly engineer a boot. So, hats off to good old BMC for doing that. And it's one of those strange things. I remember talking to a Rover dealership. It was the oldest surviving Rover dealership, which just sell any old car now these days, because I looked into them. They used to sell Rileys and Wolseleys and things, but they did find that it did make a difference. So even though you think, well, that must have cost them a lot to engineer a boot onto something ridiculous and put a bit of extra chrome on it, but actually it did translate into sales. I know there weren't huge sales, but there was a very loyal market. And I think it meant that there were no discounts involved. People just bought it because it had Riley stuck on it. But yeah, I mean, what is it? You know, 998 engine, and I think the first one was 848.
Yeah.
But I think they ended up as 998, didn't they?
That's right.
There was a series 2, and I think there was even a series 3, wasn't there?
I think the early ones didn't have seams. Didn't have body seams.
No, I think you're right. Yeah.
And for reasons presumably of economy, they brought back the seams. There we go. But yeah, the Riley Elf, it was a kind of upmarket version of a Mini in a way. They also had the Woolsey Hornet, which was almost exactly the same car, slight differences in trim, slightly different front end treatment, but it essentially was the same car, which was positioned somewhere between the Mini and the Riley in the range. Brought out at the same time. In fact, since we're talking about Christmas things, I was looking for Christmas car adverts. And I didn't look very hard, to be honest, but I did find an interesting one from the 1960s. It was Woolsey. Just a single-page advert, yeah. Wow. It was quite a nice little ad. Yeah. If you look under Woolsey Christmas advert, you might find it. But I digress. Going back to the Riley Elf, they didn't sell particularly well, James. No. I mean, I think they had marginally outsold the Hornet. But we're talking of something like 30,000 or so Elves and 29,000 or so Hornets. And there's only a few hundred Elves left in the road now. I think it's about 400 plus, round about that figure. So we're not dealing with a car that's going to be seen very often on the roads, put it that way.
No.
I think numbers have sort of stabilized, I believe, but again, it's quite rare. But that doesn't answer the question, of course. Is it a cracker or is it a turkey?
It's a cracker, isn't it, really? It's a Mini with a bigger boot, really. I suppose it's a slightly more visually challenged Mini, maybe. For some, it's a pretentious Mini, but I tell you what, it's a Mini and a real Mini. They're all classics, David, without any exception. So, you can only vote one way with this, I think.
I can't get into it. It's too damn small.
But that's every car. You can't get into a Volvo.
I mean, I did try to drive a Mini once. That was hilarious. Yeah. My knees were up round about my ears. But yeah, I'll vote for the rest of the population in this one, exclude myself and say, it's got to be a cracker.
Yeah.
But I just wish they'd given it a little bit more room so I could have enjoyed it too. But
yeah,
it's Christmas, I'm going to be generous in spirit. So yes, it's a cracker. So we move on from that to one of Mr. Ruppert's brilliant ideas.
Oh, really?
You were going to talk about cars that are surprisingly good on snow.
Yeah.
Presumably, you've got some stories for us.
Well, actually, yes. We actually go straight back to Minis, because we did have some heavy snowfall a couple of years ago. And I can't remember, we were sort of between vehicles, and I can't remember what the situation was, but I had to travel 25 miles in quite deep snow. And so the car of choice was obviously a Mini, because we all know that won the Monte Carlo Rally. So it must be good in the snow. And I tell you what, it was fantastic. But what I've sort of learned from all this is that actually people used to cope a lot better than people do now. I think people just fall off the road or just think, well, I've got a 4x4, so that'll be fine with ice and snow. And they don't apply any thinking. And you were looking at old adverts. And actually, if you look in old car magazines from the 1960s, in the winter editions, there are so many adverts for snow chains. It's unbelievable. You just think, wow, studded tires and snow chains. And, you know, that's what people used to do. And they used to know how to drive in those conditions. So it is actually quite remarkable. But I think the incredible thing I saw a few years ago was a very old couple in a Daihatsu Kiori, which was very much at the end of its life. It was very, very rusty. It was very, very old, a very early edition. And it had, you know, thin tires, but all the weight over the engine. And they were in a completely iced up car park. And so while people, probably in Volvos and all sorts, were sliding everywhere and not doing anything, they just casually, and they didn't seem to have chains or studs on their tyres, they just manoeuvred their way in and out of the car park without any drama whatsoever. And, you know, maybe he's an ex-rally driver or something, but it was quite remarkable to see, the cheapest car in the car park was actually the most adept at dealing with the conditions. But as we all know, it's always the nut behind the wheel, and that's got a lot to do with how we drive. But if I think about the cars that I've owned over the years where I've been in deep snow, they're cars where you would think are probably quite inappropriate. Lots of BMWs, which you wouldn't think are actually very good in the snow, but providing you've got a sack of spuds in the back, you're actually okay. You know, you just got to take your time. You take your time. You don't rush. Don't do anything quickly, and you're fine. And so I think the majority of cars are actually pretty good in the snow. And it's also when I moved to the countryside many years ago before sports utility vehicles became the thing. Nobody had, you know, apart from a farmer would have a Land Rover, but apart from that, everybody managed in Morris 1100s and Austin Maxis, you know, and they were perfectly fine. So that's it for me, David. But have you ever fallen off the road in the ice? I'm sure you haven't.
Well, I'd sort of half spin once. The road was completely iced over, and it was a left hand bend. I was in the Naval Reserve at the time, and I was driving to it, and car just would not go around the bend. It was slid right across the road, nothing I could do. But that's another story. Going back to cars that are surprisingly good on snow, I had a Matra Mirena. I had several Matra Mirenas over the years. Mm. My first one was the 1.6 version, and I'd taken it down to Newcastle to get some work done to it, and picked it up and was driving home, and I thought the quickest way to go home is across country, rather than go up and round, because I was in the West Coast, obviously I'm coming from the East. So I didn't come down the E66 or whatever. I came across Ettrick Bridge, that sort of way. And it started to snow heavily. And it was virgin snow. I mean, nobody had been in that road. It didn't do anything wild. It didn't step out at me. It just occasionally there was a little shimmy from the back, and that was it. It was very, very good indeed. Got me home safely. So I was very, very grateful to it. I mean, obviously I wasn't going at any speed for obvious reasons. For living in the West Coast as I do, we get some snow, but it doesn't actually last long. There's so much salt in the air because of the sea that it tends to go away quite quickly, which is rubbish when you're a kid and you want to go sledging. You see all the news programs from inland, people going sledging, etc. I think we'll bring that section of the podcast to an end, except for one thing. We had a visitor during the week, James.
Oh, really?
Yes, a chap we know.
Yeah.
Came in the red eye.
Oh, amazing.
Yes, and he's left a message for the listeners, and yeah. We'll just play you out on that as we take a break.
Ah, greetings. It is me, Recamp. I wish you all a very Merry Christmas. And if I should turn up at your door, please, please, do invite me in for the bite.
And we're back. Mr. Buffett's got trifle all over his face now. Which
oh, yeah.
It's quite a sight to behold, let me. It reminds me of a fellow who went to the doctor, James.
Yeah? And what happened?
He had some sponge in his head.
Yeah.
He had some jelly in his shoulders.
Oh, right.
Some fruit cocktail on his other shoulder, and where his moustache should have been, was covered in custard.
Goodness me.
And the doctor says, "What's wrong with you?" He says, "Well, I feel a trifle stupid." Anyway, yeah. You probably noticed, listeners, that there's the odd jingle being played through this podcast, and that's thanks to Mr. Ruppert, who composed them all.
Well, I think we got some friends to do those. I think Robin Trower, I think, did one for us. There was Andy, what's his name, out of the Police. I think he did one. And it was very, very good of them. They're all big fans of the podcast, so it was very nice of them to contribute. And obviously Sid Snott as well, I think, did a terrible punky thing, but you know.
Would that not be Gizzard Puke?
It could have been, yeah.
Oh, my name's Gizzard Puke. If you think punks did, Claire Wilbury. I did like Gizzard Puke, yes, he was funny. Anyway, we have a challenge for this week, and it is to buy each other a Christmas present of a car.
Yeah.
And we didn't put any limits on this at all. And I know what James is going to go. I'm absolutely convinced that I know what James is going to buy for me. It's an obvious choice here, but has he gone for it?
I don't think I have, David. I think I've been very, very kind.
What you didn't buy me an Aston Martin Vanquish then?
No, I didn't. No.
Oh, right. Okay.
I actually couldn't stretch to that. That was a few quid too much for me.
Yeah, but you could have got a discount for cash or something, mate.
Really? I don't know about that. Yeah.
With your negotiating skills, yeah, sure. Anyway, you fire away. You tell the world what you got, because I'm dying to hear.
Really? Well, first of all, David, I mean, it took a fair amount of paper to wrap it, but I think he'd be very happy once you've torn it all off. It's a fashionably white car. It's in Bianca white. There's a clue there, apparently.
Ricky.
Yeah, that's it. So if you park it outside in the snow, you might not be able to find it for a few days, but
We don't get snow here, that's okay.
No, well, that's all right.
Well, it doesn't lie anyway.
But what I thought you'd like, David, and I think you're going to be very, very happy, is a Peugeot.
Oh,
yeah, and not only that, it's a 306.
Oh,
which I quite liked. I know, not everybody thought they were great. The GTI 6, I thought would be, I'll tell you what, David, there's virtually none left. There are none left. You cannot, for love nor money, fight. I mean, everyone's either keeping them, or they were all written off in the early 2000s. But there are just none left. But what I managed to find, I did manage to find one, and I didn't have to go, to France or abroad as I usually do. But I found a 306 Rally, so it's a proper lightweight one.
Ooh.
And it's one of only 200 in Bianca White. So it's the lightweight one. So you've got no fiff and faff. Obviously, I checked whether it would fit a Malloy, and apparently it will. They've done all sorts of work to make that happen.
Yeah.
It was going for, I thought, a very reasonable $11,950. It's unrestored. It's in white. It was with a dealer. And it seems to be, the absolute perfect car. And I just couldn't believe how difficult they are to find. I scrolled through pages and pages and pages. And I eventually found this one. But this is pretty much the only GTI 6 that I could find.
Good grief. A friend of mine's got two 106 Rallies. But he is going to be so jealous when he sees that. Yeah. And just justifiably so. It's a great car. Thank you
very
much, James.
Yeah. No, it's a pleasure.
Very kind of you. Yeah. Well, I had a bit of trouble with yours.
Oh, no.
I thought, what do I get the man who's got everything? And I thought, do I get him an Italian car? I thought, no, he probably wouldn't like that. A French car, now Mr. Corrugated would like that,
yeah.
But perhaps not James.
Yeah.
And I thought, get him a German car.
Oh, okay.
And then I thought, well, let's go for something that's got a bit of provenance.
Mm.
This is a car that, an earlier version of which was owned by one of the first men in space.
Oh, right.
Yes, John Glenn. And if it's good enough for John Glenn, well, it's good enough for the rest of us, I have to say. And what I found was a 1970 NSU Prinz 4L. It's in Rome.
Yeah.
It's a turquoise colour.
Mm.
It actually looks in very good condition. It's only it's from 1970, I think I said that. It's done 30,000 kilometres from new.
Yeah.
It's got a creamy, it's a cream and black interior. Said to be in excellent condition throughout. And the photographs certainly would indicate that is true. It's the recent inspection, full service, and it's from southern Italy, originally, it seems, and there's no corrosion issues. So you think that's pretty darn good.
No, I'd be very, very happy with that.
Absolutely. And it's not got much power, but it's small, it's rear-engined, but possibly just a thing for those tight Norfolk lanes.
Yeah.
And people will see you coming. It's a very bright colour.
I'm quite happy with those. I mean, I think those are sort of one of the best kept classic car secrets. I think if people go NSU, they're probably not at all certain about what they are. But I think that was quite good at motorsport, wasn't it? Used to see it on the rallies and stuff. And pretty much like the Mini, it sort of had its own little niche. And I think it won its class in loads of things. And I'd be very happy with that. And I do like those. It's a very nice, clean design. It'd be nice to have something with the engine at the back, because I don't have something with the engine at the back. That would be rather good fun. So I'm looking forward to opening my garage and finding that you pushed it in there when my car has been turned.
Obviously, it's coming in Italy, so we'll have to import it.
Yeah,
be a few bits of red tape to go through,
yeah,
but we should have it with you in time for Christmas.
Oh, that's
good. A satisfactory conclusion all round then.
Yeah, no, I think we're all very happy then, aren't we?
I think so.
Yeah.
But again, James, we are talking about Christmas, and there's a tradition at Christmas, is there not, of telling ghost stories.
Goodness me.
And we have one. Oh, well, I have one.
Well, you have one.
This is a true story. Apparently, it was on the TV back in the 80s. It's not a particularly horrific story, so please don't get frightened. But apparently it did happen. It occurred in 1979 when a 26-year-old man from Bedfordshire was driving home following a darts match. It was sometime in the evening. He was close to the village of Stanbridge, and he saw a young man thumbing a lift. And he was driving a van, this chap. It's said to be a minivan. I don't know whether it means it's a small van or an actual minivan. He was a carpet fitter, so I think a minivan might have been a bit small for that, but perhaps not. Anyway, whatever type of van he was driving, he stopped, pulled over, the hitchhiker got in, and he was contemporarily dressed. His face was said to be pale and quite long, and the driver of the vehicle said, "Where are you going?" And the young man didn't answer him, but pointed down the road. So he thought, okay. He thought, well, maybe the chap can't speak. Maybe he's mute. Maybe he's had an accident or something. So he drives along, and shortly thereafter, he decides to have a smoke. And being a fairly nice sort of guy, obviously he stopped to pick up a hitchhiker, which suggests he's a decent guy. He decides to offer the young man one, a cigarette that is. Turns to offer him one. The young man's gone. Not there. He pulls the van over to a halt, puts the interior light on, looks in the back. There's nobody there. He hadn't opened the door, hadn't got out the back. He wasn't in the vehicle. So you can imagine at this point thinking, what the heck just happened? And he basically legs it to a pub in his hometown, goes in, gets a whiskey. And the the barman says to him, you look really pale, Roy. Have you seen a ghost or something? He says, yeah, well, I have actually, mate. And he told several people in the pub. He then insisted on going with his wife to the police station because he thought this is such a strange story. And he wanted to know if they knew of any accidents in that road. They could explain it, but no one did. And according to his wife, they slept with the lights on that night. He had a feeling this entity, whatever it was coming home from. And he never changed the story. There were no witnesses to it. He was on his own. You get the usual bunch of skeptics saying, oh, he dreamt it or he hallucinated. Well, he was driving along a remote country road, and if he was hallucinating or dreaming, chances are he'd have ended up in a ditch or a hedge. So I think that's not really likely. I'm inclined to believe it. If he says he saw it, he seems genuine, then certainly to him, at the very least, it was real. And there we go. But that is a true ghost story. Not one to give you nightmares, but one to give you perhaps something to think about. And indeed, Mr. Ruppert, it sort of chimes to a small degree with your own experience.
Very much so, David. And I did do a tiny bit of research on it. The 1075 is actually regarded as one of the weirdest roads in Norfolk for sightings. They've actually cited a shaggy person there. Well, basically the
wild. It wasn't me. I've not been to Norfolk lately.
Well, okay. Actually, David, I mean, I you have been described to me as a wild man, and they have described you here as the wild man of Watton, or the Bigfoot of the forest, because it runs through Thetford Forest, this road, where I saw my apparition, and there are quite a few confirmations of it. But I wouldn't say I spotted a large, long-haired creature, which, again, is a terrible description of you.
I do need a haircut. Yeah, it's quite long at the moment. Yeah.
These sightings have been going back to June 1986. So maybe it's shadows that get thrown up. Because it's quite a dense forest and so forth. They've called it various things. Yeah, it's even been called the Thetford Forest Park Bear. There's bears in our forest, the Elverdon creature and the Thetford walking figure in the dark, which is very complicated.
Wow.
But there you go. So, yeah, Thetford Forest is probably quite a creepy place. I think Boadicea used to hang out there. So maybe it's some ghost of one of her fighters. I don't know. But there is actually, you can find out more. There is the British Bigfoot Research Group, unbelievably. So there are there are grown-ups devoting their time to this.
Why not? I mean, it's a harmless pastime. At the worst, it's a harmless pastime.
Yeah.
That's the worst you can say about it. And who knows? I mean, you've got the grey man of Ben McDooey in the Highlands up in the Cairngorms. A figure has been seen, but it's more often sounds and other things that have been noticed up there. And there are lots of stories about that. In fact, one guy was so spooked, it took him 30 years to come out with it. And he was a famous professor. He had a solitary experience near the summit of Ben McDooey, I think 1894, and he didn't talk about it till about 1925, and he never went back there on his own. On the mountains, of course, some sightings could be of a Brocken spectre and things like that, which is obviously a visual thing, but there were definitely things out there that we don't quite understand, like politicians, for example. we'll not go back to that one, that old chestnut, though. But yeah, I find the whole thing very interesting, because there's a couple of spooky stories that I do know of, and one didn't personally experience it, but it was members of my family, and their word is beyond contestation as far as I'm concerned. So I do believe what it is, don't know, but there was something. But for the most part, seems to be whatever these things are, they seem to be pretty benign. So live and let live, James, eh?
Oh, absolutely. That's our motto here.
But it has to be. That has to be. We, even declared an amnesty in the MX5 for Christmas. Which leads us to the zenith, the high point of this Christmas podcast. It wouldn't be Christmas without Mr. Ruppert giving his address to the nation. So may I present you, lords and lieges, ladies and gentlemen, and sundry others, with James Ruppert giving his Christmas address.
Well, I've got nothing prepared, David. I haven't even got notes.
That's part of the course.
But I think what I want to avoid, being sort of all sort of negative about stuff, when there is actually a lot of stuff to be negative about. If you're a driver of cars, we are under attack, people. And every year it seems to get worser. And what we were talking about right at the beginning of the podcast is that there are politicians saying, why bother having a private car? That's terribly selfish of you, isn't it? And as you say, there's a girl from Sweden who's not very happy about things. So it doesn't look very good for us. But what we have to do, obviously, is be a bit positive back. I'll just point you towards someone, and I will put a link somewhere, but there's a chap called Stuart, and what he does, he buys Jaguar XKs, and then he wraps them in some amazing racing livery, and then he collects money for charity off the back of it. So he parks them at shows and does all sorts of things, and he's raided. He sends me pictures. It must be about 3 times a year. But he does, you know, selflessly. He does selfless work. His name is Stuart Dixon. I'll put a link in. He's called Sherwood Jaguar Racing. That's it. And he's obviously got a Just Giving page for stuff. So please go along there and give. Look at the charities that he highlights. But it's all the usual good stuff. But there you go. He's doing good things with his cars. He's making an effort. He's not moaning about things. He's thinking, I can be a force for good. And that's what we should do. And if we can brighten up people's lives, we're both always pleased when we see classic cars in particular, but even bangers on the road. It proves that people are keeping them going. And it genuinely does raise a smile. You really do go for it from ear to ear. And if you can give them a cheery wave, I think that's what we should be doing into 2022. So I hope more people get old cars on the road, more people defy the doubters and, prove that you can use older cars as daily drivers. You know, they do seem to work. They don't seem to break down as often, I think, as some modern cars have very curious things that seem to go wrong with them, whereas old cars, it's all understandable, and even if you're not a fiddler, you can probably diagnose what's wrong. And I also find older cars will keep going, so we want to be a bit more like Stuart, be good to people and think of nice things. And also, if you buy any of David Malloy's books, he gives quite a lot of money away to charity. He does good things. I don't do that at all. I'm a terrible person. But out there are people in the bangers and classics movement who want to do good. And that's what we should do. And we will win over the doubters that way. People go, well, actually, cars aren't that bad. We'll let you live. We'll let you drive your cars for a few years longer. We won't introduce E20 petrol or E30 petrol and drive you all away. So yeah, for 2022, let's all be positive and happy and bright, raise money for good causes, and love our fellow man and woman.
Amen to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amen to that. Mm. Yeah, well, they brought out a new petrol for Yorkshire, so it's on test there. It's Ebagoon petrol. Anyway, I have an address for the nation too, James.
Do you? Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, it's 27 Acacia Avenue, Wolverhampton. Mm.
Yeah.
And on that note, yeah, I'd like to say thank you for listening. We will be back next week, probably even less sober and less sensible than usual. Yeah. But we hope you join us.
Yeah. Are you up to anything in particular, David, over the Christmas period that we should know about? Or
watching a lot of films.
Oh, okay.
Reading some books, watching films.
Yep.
Just generally chilling, spending time with wife and the animals, and that's about it.
Okay.
And I wish all of you a very Merry Christmas indeed.
Fantastic. Yep, I'm off to help at the home for retired Hammer Horror actresses. I have to wear a neck guard apparently whilst I'm there, but I'll be doing a few shifts over there over the holidays. So it'd be great, and hopefully I'll come back at the end of it all.
Indeed, indeed. And on that note, take care. Goodbye.
Yeah, bye everybody.
Ah, it's me again. They seem to have scoffed all the food and left me alone. I just wish to say to you that if you see a cheap dishwasher in the sales, then please let me know. I thank you.